Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
And you're welcome back. So Monday Night Rugby is on the way very shortly. Rory O'Connor and Matt Williams coming your way. We are keeping an eye on Manchester City Wolves, just underway. Football Show, we'll speak to Adam Pope, who covers Leeds United for the BBC, about Bielsa and his shenanigans.
He should be slung out of the country. He should give his wages to soldiers, Joe, for what he did.
We don't do that in this country, said Neil Warnock, probably. So I don't know actually if you heard Adam Pope on at the start of the season. He was very excited by Bielsa, and we said to him, he's a really good guest. And we said, well, we'll talk to you in a couple of months, see how it all settles down. And we thought this would be the opportune time to talk about the Spygate, but also just generally how well Leeds are going under Bielsa. And then myself and Dan will pick through a load of stories, everything from the latest movements on Declan Rice's Instagram to the weekend that was. So it looks like a full house in Manchester this evening.
Yeah, near on it. 3 minutes played at the Etihad. Manchester City nil, Wolves nil. Sergio Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne good enough for places on the bench for City tonight. Matt Doherty restored to the Wolves starting 11 following his bench cameo against Liverpool last week. Meanwhile, Huddersfield Town manager David Wagner has left the club by mutual consent, with them sitting bottom of the Premier League table. The German took over in November 2015, leading them to promotion from the Championship, but they've struggled this season, picking up just 11 points from their 22 games thus far, and they are 8 points from safety. It was Dean Hoyle in a statement said that mutual consent in this instance does mean mutual consent. Racing 92 this evening condemning the racist insults allegedly aimed at Simon Zebo during Saturday's Heineken Champions Cup meeting with Ulster at Kingspan Stadium. European rugby officials have spoken with both clubs about the incident, with Ulster, pardon me, saying they'll robustly investigate any such incidents. Racing's statement also suggests that only one or two people may have been involved, adding that they didn't wish to stigmatise Ulster rugby as a whole. On the injury front, both John Cooney and Billy Burns are doubts for Ulster's trip to Leicester on Saturday. Peter O'Mahony rated as 50-50 at best for Munster's final Heineken Champions Cup Pool 2 meeting with Exeter. Andy Murray says he'll decide on the hip surgery that could extend his career within the next week or two.
Richie, thanks very much for that. Now, we're joined on the line by Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent. Evening, Rory.
Hello.
So, I'm sure people realise at this stage, we stream Monday night and Wednesday night rugby at 5 o'clock on Facebook Live so that, frankly, people who are leaving the office can get their fix of rugby early doors and then play it out on the evening show. We did that earlier on at 5 o'clock. Yourself, myself and Matt Williams chatted through the weekend's rugby, and we'll play that out very shortly. But at that stage, we were making the point that all we had to go on regarding the alleged incidents up in Belfast was Simon Zebo's tweet, which was to the effect, "I hope my ears deceive me with some comments directed my way from the crowd. Hashtag not on, Django always wins." And there was, as you might expect, some speculation. He was talking about racist comments when he used the word comments as well, as opposed to just the general booing which was going on in the back of the Michael Lowry incident, we presume, from the U Arena. So we literally walked out of our chat, and then we saw Racing 92 had released a statement which clarified matters. Racing 92 strongly condemns the racist insults that Simon Zebo was targeted with on Saturday during the European Cup game between this club and Ulster Rugby at Kingspan Stadium in Belfast. Racism has no place in rugby, in which the values of solidarity and togetherness are the exact opposite of any forms of discrimination. They went on to say, Racing does not wish to stigmatise Ulster rugby as a whole. The insults suffered by Zebo are the actions of only one or two individuals and have been condemned by many Ulster fans who have shown their support for Simon. End of statement. We offered Simon Zebo the opportunity to come on the show this evening. He understandably, I think, wants to keep the head down and focus on a game on Saturday. But we can presume, Rory, that Racing 92 wouldn't have released a statement without clarifying the situation with Zebo. So we can certainly take it that the comments he heard directed his way, as he tweeted about, were racist, which elevates this story very quickly to an unbelievably serious matter.
Absolutely, Joe. And like, I think it's better for everyone that there's clarity around it, because Simon Zebo was obviously annoyed enough at what he was subjected to put it out there, but until we were clear about what, everyone out there was clear about what he was alleging and what the nature of what was said, you know, we couldn't properly discuss it. And I'm back in my brain trying to think of a similar incident in the last number of years in Irish rugby. There's been incidents across other sports here and there, but it's not something that I can recall off the top of my head. It's something that's hugely serious. It sounds like Ulster, certainly Dan McFarland, was appealing for witnesses today. They're launching an investigation. You know, they've had unbelievably negative publicity over the last 18 months. Mm. You know, they don't, you know, they, the last thing they needed was to be embroiled in another bad news story, but they have to deal with this now, and it may have been only the actions of one or two people, but that's that is serious enough that it needs to be taken really, really seriously, because there's absolutely no place in Irish sport and no place for it in Irish rugby. So, EPCR are standing back and letting Ulster have a look into it themselves, but I'm sure that they are very conscious of the publicity that will generate and the seriousness of the issue, because their players, of all, regardless of all races, religions, and all that sort of thing, are, you know, across the spectrum, and they need to stamp it out as well.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if the EPCR are obligated now to investigate it themselves, but it seems it's Ulster leading the investigation at the moment. Here's a very short clip, Dan McFarlane speaking earlier on today before the Racing statement.
If there's anybody out there who knows what happened, and if something happened and can give information on that, look, we want to know. You know, we want to know, because nobody should have to put up with that.
So there you are. I mean, there is a point here where, as Racine have pointed out, it was one or two, and there's just no legislating for idiots. So, you know, it's hard to draw broad conclusions about this. But it is shocking that an Irish international is abused racially, playing up in Belfast. He's represented the country, scored tries for the country. Clearly, racism is abhorrent regardless, so it's no worse or no better. But it was that extra bit shocking, I must say.
Yeah, look, we all knew he was going to come in for a little bit of a torrid time because of his gesture at Michael Lowry in the last game, yeah. And he was booed roundly, and I think he would have expected that and probably got a bit of a kick out of it. But yeah, look, these individuals across the line, you know, and yeah, it is the act of individuals, but I think the message needs to be sent out that there's no place for it. Mm. That any idiots who go to a game should know that there is no place for it. And yeah, there is something. Yeah, it's all the more galling at the fact that sometimes he was a household name. He's delivered for the national team on so many occasions. You know, he didn't. Like, nobody deserves the alleged comments that he's come across, but. You know, it just, yeah, as I say, it's all the more galling that it's him, that it's one of our own, essentially, who's come home, his first game in Ireland since he left, and he's subjected to that. So, look, yeah. I think Dan McFarlane's comments there are exactly, you know, on the money. He seems to be fairly unequivocal about the fact that they want to get to the bottom of it. He's condemning it, and, you know, Ulster would do well to go after it, but at the same time, identifying the individuals in an 18,000 capacity crowd or whatever it was on Saturday is going to be a difficult thing to do.
No, it's true, I'm not sure. Would Kingspan have the sophistication of CCTV that your standard Premier League ground has now? I don't know.
Well, I'm not aware. I know that, like, as a recently refurbished ground, which hosted a World Rugby, the World Rugby Women's World Cup 2 or 3 years ago, you know, they had the final, the semi-final there. It will be up to fairly good spec.
Yeah.
There is kind of a substantial-looking kind of police facility there, but I don't know how close they can zoom in and all that sort of stuff, and, you know, whether they can go back through the tapes a couple of days afterwards. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it is probably, of the Irish rugby grounds, it's probably one of the better set up for this sort of thing, because it is, relatively recently done. But, yeah, like, that task now, I think they're probably relying on fellow supporters to come forward and see the wrong on this, and to give evidence, about what happened, and to kind of give them the idea or an idea of what happened, what was said, and who said it. Because really, you know, if they can identify these people, you're looking at, you know, lifetime bans and that sort of thing, because that's the way it has to be handled, because there's no place for it.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the breaking news this evening. At this point, all we can do is let the investigation take its course. Rory, thanks very much for coming again this evening. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent. Gabriel Jesus has put Manchester City 1-0 up after 12 minutes against Wolves. And now, without further ado, minus any Simon Zebo chat, because we've dealt with it there, here is Monday Night Rugby from earlier on.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Yes, so another European weekend gone, another one to come, and we had four Irish wins from four. All four can still make the knockout stages in Europe, which would be a first, actually. So on Friday night, well, it was the Joey Carberry show, amongst other things. 26 points, 2 tries, 1 assist, 80 metres with the ball in hand, all contributing to Munster's 41 points to 15 win at King's Home. On Saturday then, Leinster's strength and depth underlined at the RDS, a bonus point win against a Toulouse side who had been unbeaten since September, 12 matches unbeaten. And then Ulster against all odds. We laughed Stephen Ferris out the door on Wednesday when he predicted an Ulster win. They beat Racing in Belfast to give themselves a real chance of progression. And a strange game for Connacht. They hung on after going 17-0 up against Sale. In the end, it was 20 points to 18 in the Challenge Cup. Matt Williams is with us, and Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent is here in studio. Rory, these are good times for the Irish provinces in Europe, to say the least.
Yeah, they are, and we're getting to the stage where, you know, there's a natural inclination to wonder about the opposition and all that sort of stuff. But
I did have that nagging thought in my head. How much do they care about this?
But they do care. You know, Gloucester sold out on Friday night, and it was a really good atmosphere, and they were applauding the players off with 10 minutes to go when they were being taken off because they felt like they'd given everything and come up short against a really top quality team. And I think there's a very good chance of an Irish team winning it this year. Certainly a good chance of getting two back to the semi-finals again. You know, Connacht could go on a run in the Challenge Cup as well. You know, Ulster are overperforming, I think, to where we all expected them to be. And it all, although there's a couple of injuries starting to come in, crop up, it's all pointing towards a very positive 2019 on the overall scale as well, with the national team kind of cherry picking the best from all four. So it's just a great time to be involved in Irish rugby. It's a great time for the players to, you know, all these players are all going into these games believing that they're going to beat the best teams in Europe, and the best teams in Europe are almost afraid of them. You know, and we're in a kind of new paradigm there.
Yeah. Matt, I think you went from, what, 25, 30 degrees in Australia to the coldest touchline I've been on in some time on Saturday, and now here we are. Do you know where you are yet?
I'm somewhere, Joe. I know I'm talking to you, and I'll settle with that. Yeah, mate, I left Sydney and it was 37 degrees, and I think it was about, the wind chill there must have been down to about two, so... we survived it, mate. That's the main thing.
Yeah, we did. We'll come on to Leinster in a moment. Let's go chronologically as much as anything. So Gloucester 15 points to Munster's 41, and things are all shaping up very nicely for next Saturday. Exeter with a bonus point win over Castra means they are certainly within striking distance of Munster at the top of Pool 2. That's next Saturday, 5:30 in Thomond Park. It goes on head-to-head, so in short, give the real short version, if Munster avoid defeat, then they'll certainly go through, and there are other ways as well, even if Exeter win, that Munster can go through if they get a losing bonus point or if they get the four tries and Exeter don't. But in short, Munster will go out to win that game and that will see them safely through. As for Kingsholm on Friday, Joey Carberry, I mentioned some of the stats there, his 26 points, his two tries. There were lots of favourite moments you could have of Carberry's performance, Rory. I think for most people it's the several quick calculations and the left-footed kick through for Andrew Conway, which summed up a whole heap.
It was a magic moment, wasn't it? It was one of those times where everything in the stadium, you know, the whole thing's going helter-skelter and he just slows time down and just puts you, like, on his, what's, you know, ostensibly his bad foot, is able to put that beautiful chip through. And it just summed up how calm he looked on the night and how dominant Munster were as well, that they were able to give him the time and space where he could thrive and deliver a performance that really marks, you know, we all knew he was talented, we all knew he was going to do, I think we all were fairly confident he was going to do well in Munster, but... You know, there was a bit of, you know, he'd hiccup and cast. There was always going to be growing pains to a degree. You know, he hasn't had a huge amount of experience at 10, but that was the most comfortable he's looked in a big game since he's gone down to Munster. And you know, he almost announced himself as a rival to Johnny Sexton. I don't know if we're quite there yet. But
yeah,
how much of an
almost is that now? Because I saw those mumblings happening this weekend.
Yeah, I think it was Austin Healy mischievously threw it out there on BT on Friday night. And I think it was kind of half a joke. But by the end, it was less of a joke, you know. And I think, look, Johnny's a world player of the year. He's brilliant and at his best, remains the best that is out there.
Yeah.
And I think, if... this knee injury that, you know, that has kept him out for the last couple of weeks proves to be more serious, because we never quite know with injuries in Irish rugby. I think there's less concern now that Joey Carberry starting with Ross Byrne on the bench, even against England, with Conor Murray alongside him and the players they can put around them. You know, World Cup final, you still want Johnny Sexton starting, but we saw maybe on the 29th that Joey Carberry's a little bit in Johnny Sexton's head, you know, when he threw him to the ground, stood over him the way he did with Ron O'Gara all those years ago, that he's starting to consider him a rival. And that can only be a good thing, because if he can push Johnny Sexton to be better, well, that is only going to be good. And if Johnny Sexton does start to decline, because he is well into his 30s now, it's great, or suffers another injury, or this injury turns out to be, it just means that there's depth, and there wasn't depth a year ago. So that's a good thing as well. So this move, for all that Leinster fans don't want to hear it, has been really positive for the overall
success.
Picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I think David Nusafora is sitting in his office somewhere saying, I mean, I've been vindicated thoroughly. And do you know, the Carberry experiment, and that's the wrong word for it at this stage, but it has been such a success that I think it's almost, forcibly educated the rugby public about the merits of this and why it can work so well and why it will happen again in the future. And there'll be less hoo-ha, I think, the next time. Matt, since the hiccup, and it was a severe enough hiccup in Castro, you would have to say, for a young number 10 trying to find his way. Since that game, in Carberry's last three games, he's scored 56 points. He's scored three tries. He's had 17 out of 17 successful kicks. And that is hugely impressive, because I must say, I did expect at some stage this season, when Carberry had the hiccup like he did against Castro, that there would be a consequence to that. There would be a couple of weeks that would feel a bit fragile and he would have to be nursed back to health. But it's been anything but. He has bounced right back.
He's been absolutely sensational, Joe, hasn't he? He's so happy for the kid and so happy for what he's given to Munster Rugby, because he's changing the way they play. And they're changing around him. They're putting structures around him that suit his style of game. But as I remember talking here on a Wednesday night back in September with Keith Wood and yourself, and just saying the same thing. When you put any young guy in that position, especially a 10, the 10 and 9s are making hundreds of decisions in a game. They're going to have a night where sometimes those decisions are bad. That's just what's going to happen to every player as they move through, but especially your 9s and 10s. And they've obviously got a good support structure around Joey. He didn't lose confidence, and he's bounced back. But there'll be another day where he won't be perfect, because he's still learning his trade. He's still developing and growing, which is, if he can play so well as he did the other night, and we can still say that this guy is still learning his trade and learning how he goes about things, he's going to grow into a really, really good rugby player.
Yeah. I think the coverage as well has been quite fair of him. Like, any time he's discussed, it's always in the context of a player who's learning. Van Graan talked generally about the team, saying, Rory, they still have loads of areas for improvement from the Gloucester game. And if you're talking about Carberry, for instance, the restart in the second half, which drops short, that gave Gloucester a real into a game. Yeah. And against better sides, potentially away in France in a semi-final, actually you can't get the restart wrong, especially when things will be finally poised.
Yeah, and I think that's the lesson all the teams will be looking at this week. They did enough to beat the team. They did more than enough to beat the teams they were playing against. What they need to look at is, will it be good enough when it comes to the crunch in April or May? The coverage of Carberry has been fair, but it's been extensive. He's gone down there with massive focus on him, and he's handled
it
really well.
He's talked about it every week, in fairness.
Oh, absolutely, and but he has handled that very, very well. He's spoken well. He's kind of managed to just lived as most of us. Added life in the focus now. Ever since he kicked those goals against Clontarf, within 6 months he was playing against the All Blacks, and he just seems quite comfortable with it. Yeah. He has said at the age of 20 that he wants to be the best player in the world. He's owning it. He's owning that, and that, you got to admire that ambition. Ambition. And Jordan Larmour is saying similar things about the team, and these are young players full of confidence who've grown up watching Irish rugby succeed. I think Munster provided them with a lovely platform. There was pretty much their first 23 on Friday night, and it showed. And I think when they have, and it's very hard to get them all on the pitch, but when they have all their players on the pitch, they're as good as anyone. And they were so much better than Gloucester. Their pack was excellent. Their tight five was very good. Their back five, their scrum was dominant.
A lot of
tight burn is exceptional.
Yeah, a lot of penalties in that game were in the scrum, weren't there?
There was,
And in Munster,
it's Romain Poit. He does tend to... Well, he's probably the best scrummaging referee, but he probably is more technical than others. Others would try and get you to play off it. But Munster were quite happy to earn those penalties and put Gloucester into a tough place. So you got it. Like, Gloucester were poor at times. The tackle for Rory Scannell's try, which was a pivotal moment in the game when the game was still a contest, was pathetic from Charlie Sharples. But, the game was there to be won. They hammered Gloucester's weaknesses. They spotted that they couldn't catch a cold, so they kept kicking to them.
That is the thing. I don't want to puncture the hype. I mean, Shane Jennings on the sideline, we were eulogising Munster, and Shane Jennings came in and said he thought Gloucester, frankly, were shocking. And I know it was Friday Night Lights and Full House and all that, but like on the BT commentary, Matt, they were saying, God, there's a magic about Conor Murray's box kicks this evening, because literally not one of them could be caught. The hooker, name escapes me now, was pretty dreadful on the night as well. Like, Gloucester were fairly abysmal, you would have to say, given it was a full house.
Gloucester were appalling. Absolutely appalling. And I've watched it. I watched that passage where Munster did 35, 36 tackles just before Gloucester scored. Mate, it was the most abject attack I have ever seen. Mm. Like, they were running into Munster players. And I'm not criticising the Munster guys. They were superb. There's actually a law in rugby, I think we spoke about it, Joe, the other day, where the pads on the goalposts are part of the try line. So if you put the ball on the base of that pad, it's a try. And the Gloucester guys, if you go back and watch it, they're actually moving away from the pad. Mm. There's one point there where they all they do is push the ball, the base of the pad's a try. They just didn't know how to attack, dropping balls. You know, and as wonderful as Andrew Conway's try was from the left foot kick from Joey Carberry, I was sitting there watching. I just screamed out, "Where's the fullback? Where's the blind wingers?" They had absolutely no one in secondary defence, as did Toulouse on occasions the other day. There was no one in that backfield. So it's 22 metres from the try line, or 30 metres from the try line, and they don't have a fullback.
I mean, Gloucester definitely will draw a line under their awfulness. We agreed on that. That is an interesting broader theme in rugby at the moment. You talk about the secondary, you talk about players being left at home. It was very evident at the RDS as well, and we saw Dave Kearney's try in particular. So teams at the moment are not leaving people at home. They're going in a line. There is a sense that there's not as much variation in the kicking that they're facing, and therefore they feel like they have license to leave fewer people at home.
Yeah, it's my bugbear at the moment about this generation of coaches going around. Not all, not in Ireland, but over, especially in the Premiership and in France. They're all just copying each other. So why do it? So why are you putting everyone on the line because no one's kicking? So what do? You kick. Put a short kicking game in, as Leinster did and as Munster did the other day. You employ a short kicking game. At one point there, when Dave Kearney's wing, the only guy in the backfield was Colby, and you know he's an electric footballer. He's only 5'4", and so they kicked to him. They kicked short to them, and this whole concept of what modern defensive coaches are doing, everyone is just copying each other. So the old story: give your opposition what they don't want. If they're putting everyone on the line, turn them around, put the ball behind them, which the Irish teams are doing. But we're seeing so little thought in attack, especially from the Premiership sides, with the exceptions of Saracens. Mm. I mean, there was some really awful thinking going on across the water at the moment, and it's a bit inbred, you know. There's no one challenging. Again, well, my feeling, Joe, that when they're stepping up in Europe and the Irish clubs step up in Europe, understand this is a different level to their domestic competition, a lot of the other places, they have no answer to it because they're not used to stepping up and facing something that's slightly different, that's not the norm. And I think we saw that in spades on Saturday.
Yeah. To Rory's point then, before we leave Munster, it does feel like pretty close to the first time that we have seen Murray, Carberry, Scannell, Farrell, Earls, Conway. And I suppose Mike Haley looks very comfortable increasingly in that team. That is pretty much the first time you would say we've seen Munster's backline in a serious game like this. And as Rory says, they may not have the greatest squad yet in European terms. But if that 15 can stay fit and that 23 can stay fit, then in Cup Rugby, Matt, they're suddenly a real threat this year, maybe ahead of schedule.
Joe, I've got to give them credit. I've been pretty critical of Munster, especially their away form, and that's what made that game for me really stand out. It was an away fixture at Gloucester, full house, and Munster turned up in offence and defence. And they haven't done that regularly, especially at home. They're a formidable side. Away from home, they've been flaky, and they were very good. But I've got to say, over the season, I've seen progression in the team. Mm. I've seen progression in all aspects of the side, which Coach Van Grand deserves credit for, the staff deserve credit for. But they're seeing their performance levels step up. So that puts them in good stead. I think they're really going to regret that game against Cast, because if things go the way that they could go, they'll more than likely miss out on a home quarter. There's a few things they need to go their way. Montpellier need to beat Edinburgh. At Edinburgh for them to get a home quarter, and that's not guaranteed this year.
Okay. And then finally, Rory, Omani's 50-50?
I think that's probably generous. Yes, I think just look, you know, Peter Omani's a player who will play through the pain barrier, we all know that, and to see him, he tried for about 2 minutes and he was just wincing every time he moved. Yeah. He's done something to his ribs, that popped the rib is the phrase that was put to Johan McGrann. He was happy to take the vagueness of it. But yeah, we're not going to. He'll be in the Ireland squad on Wednesday, I'm sure. He'll be. Yeah. They'll keep him in the mix, but I can't see him playing this week, especially with the Six Nations around the corner. You just said one thing, Joe. You said ahead of schedule. I think it has to be this year or next year for this Munster team. Maybe the year off. But like, if you think of the age profile of the kind of generation of players, yeah, like Omani, Murray, Earls, the leaders in that team, Stander, they've got to strike while the iron's hot. They have something this year, and I think they have this. All their rivals, although Saracens, Leinster, and Racing, you know, look good in patches at the weekend, and have, I think this is a year where there's actually going to be an opportunity if they can get on the road in the quarterfinals. This is a real chance for them.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. I suppose when I'm set ahead of schedule, I almost meant I hadn't expected Carberry to blend in so brilliantly, but totally for the rest of this team, the Keith Earls of the world, they are running out of time. But they feel closer to it than I suspected they would after that Racing defeat last year. They felt a long way away last year, so we'll see. Leinster 29, Toulouse 13, then Jack Conan, and then Dave Carney, and then Cronin, and Adam Byrne, as you'll hear, courtesy of Conor Morris, Keith Wood and Kevin McLaughlin, who were there for Off the Ball. Adam Byrne with the bonus point try.
Zach Holmes was waiting for, he didn't get the pass. Nadar was swallowed up right on his own 22 and swallowed up to the extent that it's a Leinster penalty, and they tap and go with Gibson Park, and he seals one. Oh! All the way over the top to Adam Byrne, and his try, bonus point time for the defending champions of the RDS. What a delivery that was from the replacement scrum half.
Yeah, there we are. So 29 points to 13. Leo Cullen said afterwards, Rory, I think I had butterflies about this game for a long time. And I would suspect it all feels like a fait accompli now that they were going to beat Toulouse. Of course they were. But if you think back to those moments before the game, that half hour before the game where the reality of who was missing for Leinster was hitting everyone, I think, and Toulouse were looking fantastic in their red out there and unbeaten in so long, there was a real sense that there were massive question marks over this game going into it. And it's just a phenomenal performance, result, outcome. Everything about it, it really just underlines everything we've said about Leinster for a long time now.
It's maybe slightly harsh, but it was a Champions Cup pack with a bit of a Pro 14 backline.
Yeah.
And they produced a Champions Cup performance, and they did it for 80 minutes. Because I thought the first half was like a mini test match. It was, you know, without the...
Physically.
I thought that there was high quality in everything that both teams were doing. I know Toulouse didn't have a huge attacking direction, but the collisions were good. You know, you'd All Blacks playing well. Femuina gassed himself out in half an hour.
Yeah.
But he had a couple of big impacts. Colby probed at the line. The problem they probably had was they picked Ramos at 10.
Why did they do that, actually? Because he'd been fullback back in October. I know he'd played well in a couple of recent games at 10 for them in the top 14.
Yeah, their first 10 isn't great either. Like, that's one probably one area of the squad.
That's Holmes.
I remember Zach, but it's one area of the squad. They've got two, in Dupont and Bezzy, they've got really good scrum halves. Yeah. I think if they have a bit of budget to go after something in the summer this year, if they got a proper out half to run the show for them, or at least complement those scrum halves, it would probably complete the jigsaw. Entomac looked his age as well. He looked like a player who was probably had been advanced, but Leinster made him look that way. I mean, they've won 12 on the trot with him in and out of the team. But Leinster showed over 80 minutes that they can play to that test match standard. They're full of even their second string players have a couple of caps under their belt at least.
Yeah.
Toulouse had 40 minutes of it in them and then got gassed afterwards. And I think it just showed that there's a new European order. I wrote this morning. You know, it's still Leinster, Munster, Racing, Saracens. And while Toulouse have their four stars in their jersey and they're on the way back, they still have a way to go to crack into that, particularly away from home. And they're going to have to go away in a quarterfinal, it looks like.
If you're watching on Facebook or Twitter, get your Heineken Star comments into us, because this week we have tickets for Munster Exeter, which is a sellout already, to give away to our best comment. Neil says, Joe, keep calm on the Joey Carberry love. Look at the opposition. Leinster aside, they've had a Manchester United-like last six games. Chill, Neil is telling me. I mean, regardless of the opposition, 17 kicks from 17 is worth noting.
You can't say Leinster aside. They beat Leinster. Leinster are European champions. They went to Connacht and won. They beat Gloucester well. You know, they didn't just squeeze by. It was the biggest away win in Gloucester's history.
Yeah.
Carberry's total was the biggest of any player at King's Home. I mean, you can't dismiss that stuff.
No, and also it seems like an easy result now, but actually half an hour before the game, there are nerves, there is pressure. So
Gloucester were still in it. Gloucester could have leapfrogged them with the right result.
I'll chill to a point. We have David Walsh, who's watching in, not the David Walsh, I think he's watching in the Cayman Islands. He says, I always like Monday Night Rugby. It aligns nicely with my lunch break. Hashtag sitting poolside. Hashtag coffee and rugby. We all hate David right now, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Shane Thomas then, Matt. Should Joey be starting one of the bigger Six Nations games, i.e. England or Wales away, regardless of Sexton's fitness?
It's a $1,000 question, isn't it? Mm. It's a very hard Six Nations to manipulate. The answer to that is I don't think Joe will do it. If he was ever going to do it, it would have been down in Australia. He would have rested Johnny, but he didn't. He thought the win of the series was more important for the team's belief, so he didn't. The game he would do it would be against Italy. The problem with the Italy game, it falls right in the middle, so it would mean that perhaps Johnny wouldn't play for a month. Mm. Play the first two games, there's a two-week break. Play Joe in the Italy game, there's another two-week break. How do you sort of keep a player at top-end match fitness? It's a difficult one. I would certainly like to see him have more time. Perhaps that will fall into the World Cup warm-ups. I certainly wouldn't be starting, the first day on February 3 when England play, whoever wins that's going to win the Six Nations. Mm. So you put your best team out that day, and that's whoever's standing that day.
And you know what, I would put in the argument as well that Johnny Sexton's injury profile of late has been exceptionally good up until Thomond Park. He is the World Player of the Year. He's played a huge amount of rugby last year off the back of a line season. He went down to Australia, did really well. I mean, he's been absolutely phenomenal. Really, the priority, as much as we all want to develop Carberry, Rory, the priority is to make sure that Johnny Sexton is happy, that he has enough rugby, that he feels good about life. Like, I don't think you want to introduce... Look, individuals are different, and maybe Sexton will respond really well to the threat of a Carberry. You know, but why would you want to introduce a factor which could upset Johnny Sexton? As in, like, do you want to create a dynamic with Carberry and Sexton that is akin to Rog and Sexton at the time? Because that can happen, because Sexton is not ready to go yet. I just, you know, look, it's tempting for all of us to talk about the Carberry factor.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth underlining the fact that the priority for Ireland is the World Player of the Year is absolutely happy with life over the next year.
Yeah, absolutely, and we do all remember that, you know, losing Johnny Sexton on the morning of the eve of the Argentina game at the World Cup, and Ian Madigan not having the exposure.
Sure,
but Ian Madigan hadn't had the exposure to European games the way that Joey Carberry's getting them. Like that experience on Friday, that defeat in Castres, all those are building in his legs, and his mind. Mm. You know, I'm not that fearful about him being pitched in. Like, he did get that first test in Australia, starting against Italy and the USA. During November, Matt's right, the schedule is really difficult for the Six Nations.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult in the pool stages of the World Cup as well, because it's kind of front-loaded with the first two games. If they go well, you've got the Russia and Samoa games, which are over kind of a 15 or 16-day period, into a quarter-final. Do you want Johnny Sexton not playing at all during that time? They'll probably give him one of them off, but he needs a run, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't have him going in cold to these games. I mean, the idea of resting Joey for the England game... is just not on the table.
Resting Johnny.
Starting Joey for the England game is not on the table. Wales depends, I guess, on how Ireland have done.
If it's Grand Slam, then...
If Grand Slam, you pick the best players.
Yeah. Or even if the Six Nations title is at stake, which it most likely will be one way or another.
And even if it's not, and it's the difference between finishing fourth and third, you've still got to, you're trying to build momentum into a World Cup. Yeah. You want to win in Cardiff. So it's a very difficult thing to do, and I just don't see... I think Joe Schmidt will pick his best team for all those games. Mm. Maybe Italy, but as Matt said, it's not an easy one.
Not least because I think Sexton is not the type of character who says, yeah, it'd be good to give Joey a chance. It's not,
well, he wasn't happy when he was resting in Australia.
No, I wouldn't think so. So just to round off on the Leinster game then, I mean, Gary Ringrose, man of the match. You mentioned Conan and Ruddock, 20 carries apiece, and the pack generally did very well. We were a bit disappointed in Toulouse. One thing for next week, you mentioned the 30, is it 8 phases or 35 phases Leinster went through. I saw you in the Irish Independent this morning just making the point that Gibson Park is obviously back in now, given the McGrath injury situation. So James Lowe might have been useful in that scenario to maybe spark something. It seems impossibly harsh to take out Scott Fardy, but I wonder, will Lowe come back in if suspension is up?
It kind of depends on Devon Toner. I think they'd probably keep it, even just to kind of remind Lowe that he can't be getting sent off in big games against Munster. I wonder, will they keep him out for another week? But I do think they need him in those big games. I think when it comes, I know they beat Racing without him in the final, but having him there and his just unbelievable unpredictability and his capacity to just go forward whenever he gets the ball, never dies with the ball, he just gives him something so different. And while Adam Byrne and Dave Kearney both scored tries the weekend and played very well, they just don't have that... I hate the word X factor, but that just unpredictability, and Lowe gives them something different. And Larmour does as well, and when they have both of them on the wings with Rob Kearney in the middle with the security, they're just a far more dangerous team. Yeah. Larmour was a little bit peripheral at the weekend. I think he gets more involvement on the wing. So, yeah, I think if they're going to win it, they need to have Lowe on the pitch, because he dovetails very well with Sexton as well, and he creates havoc when he gets the ball, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, quick word on that, Matt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I thought Scott Fardy was absolutely sensational on the weekend. But James Lowe's just in great form, and you've got to pick your best side. That's simply, and that goes with Johnny too. Like, we're all stuff around and talk about Joey. Look, you know, you pick your best players. You got the world player of the year. You pick him. You put him on the field every time, 100%. It's not even a thought in it. You know, you develop somewhere else. This Irish team can win a Six Nations and win a World Cup. So get your best team on the field, and if you're not good enough, you don't make it. Get on with life. And I'd be saying the same with James. He needs a kick in the bum for getting a red card, like Rory said, but he's the best winger in the club.
Okay. Oh, is he? Okay. Right. So, honestly, we laughed at Stephen Ferris and said, yeah, when he said Ulster could do something against Racing, the magic of Belfast and all that kind of stuff. And then, well, as you would have heard in Off the Ball, Jacob Stockdale can't be discounted.
And Ulster have to put in at the scrum. Dave Shanahan gives it off now to Will Addison. Will Addison looping his run around. It's Stockdale. Stockdale shakes off attacker. He's over the 10-metre line. He's approaching the 22. It's the chip and chase that we saw against New Zealand. It falls
through somehow.
It's like the try we saw against New Zealand. It's Jacob Stockdale. He's a miracle man. Ulster 21, Racing 92-10. That is the most Jacob Stockdale try you'll ever see. It's beautiful. It's poetry in motion. It's Ulster with three tries.
There you are, Oisin Langan, doing it justice, enjoying it the way it should be enjoyed. It's quite something for a 21-year-old to have a trademark try, Matt.
He's some operator, isn't he? The thing about that try is the start of it, the power in his palm, where he constantly beats that first defender. Very powerful dude with that push off. You know, it was no easy push off as well. And then the chip and chase. I criticised teams for not having anyone in the backfield. Racing had three of them at the ball, and the ball sidestepped all through them straight into his hands.
Yeah.
But look, he's just consistent. You know, if he did it over a couple of games, you'd say, oh, that's luck. I mean, the guy's just been doing it week in, week out, breaking records, and that was a sensational try. Well, he got a bit of luck, but it was still a great kick.
Okay, well, you've raised all the questions I want to ask there. So you probably answered the first one. I was going to make the point. Certainly, Scarlett's away, his try down the left-hand side there, the point was made that, he really should have been tackled. You know, like there was hands on him. And equally, I think it was Imhoff, he ran outside in Belfast before kicking it.
Yeah.
So, again, you would watch it in isolation and say, oh, he should have been tackled. You know, basically there were hands on him or close to him. So he's now developing, we'll get on to the kick part in a second, but he's developing this habit of actually, we're saying he should have been tackled there, and yet he's not. And he's becoming a common denominator in that. So maybe it is defend, as you say, but he's doing something when players feel they're about to get him. Maybe it's his footwork that we're not noticing. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a very powerful palm. He pushes guys off very well. Jonah Lomu should have been tackled a lot, but he wasn't because he was good. Mm. You know, this he's not Jonah Lomu. I'm not suggesting that. But this guy's developed into not just a young player of interest. He's really coming along into a very, very good rugby player because of that thing. He's very powerfully built. He's got great speed. He uses his feet well, but he uses his hands well. He pushes guys off. He's got a good palm, and that's what he did. He used all that combination against Imhoff. He used his good footwork. He was in a bad position and just palmed him really powerfully. And I've seen him do that before. Shane Horgan was the one that put me onto that. He said, watch the power in his upper body when it comes towards contact. And he did that on Saturday.
Rory, I asked Bernard Jackman this question yesterday, and he quickly enough shot me down and said, no, not really. So I'll put it to both of you. So that's now a few times he's done his little kick over the top and managed to have a sense of where the ball was going to go.
Yeah.
So is the ball quite literally just bouncing his way at the moment and he's in this sweet spot? Or have we seen players down the years who have had some kind of innate sixth sense, given, you know, they know what way the ball comes off their foot, they can predict particularly well what way a ball is going to bounce?
I don't think so. I think he's riding the crest of a wave and things are going his way. And he's making things go his way in some degrees by putting himself in those positions. But the only person that I've ever seen successfully manipulate the ball like that would be Ronan O'Gara, and, you know, be able to get the spiral completely right. But he was winding up. He was an out half, an expert kicker, winding up with a bit of time from a perfect Peter Stringer delivery. Like, Stockdale's doing this on the... He's just beating him off. There's a guy in front of him. He's chipping him over and he's chasing the ball. And, like, he is literally just following that ball wherever it goes.
But how did three Racing players not predict the bounce and he did?
I'm not sure. I think he waited. I think he had a bit of patience and he just waited for it to bounce because he knew, well, the three of them were on the ball. If it bounced forward the way you expect it to bounce, it's no try, and it's probably a bad decision to get the ball away.
Yeah.
But Jacob Stockdale doesn't make bad decisions right now, and he's like, there's nothing wrong with riding that wave. I mean, there's an element of luck in a lot of the scores that he's getting, but he's making his own luck to a degree as well. And
right.
It's very, very impressive.
That's 2 out of 2 shot me down, Matt. Can you please identify a player who's been able to predict the bounce of a rugby ball?
Look, I'd slightly disagree with, well, not completely disagree with Roy, but you know, he's obviously practicing that kick. So if you were running at pace, you do a chip, the ball, and you hit it on your toe the right way, the ball will rotate. So that means when it lands, it'll bounce straight. And I agree with you, Ron O'Gara was a genius at it. But it's a different type of kick. So he's not kicking long, he's kicking short. What he's doing, he's not over-kicking the ball. The ball's not going dead. So we've got to give him some credit for the creation of that kick. And the other part is, it's not going out. The ball is just coming infield. I think on Saturday, that particular try, he was lucky. He got luck at the end. But your kick's only as good as your chase. There were 3 racing guys there, and I thought they stuffed up. I thought they all thought the other guy was going to get it, and then the next bounce went his way.
Mm.
But you know, he's done a lot of kick through. Like we think of St Patrick's Day in Twickenham, obviously against the Blacks, and then this one, he's practicing that play.
Yeah.
But once a rugby ball, after the second time a rugby ball hits the ground, then it's luck.
Right,
because
okay.
It goes anywhere.
Well, I'm attributing a superpower to him that he knows and no one else does. So that's my story. 6 tries in 5 games now. He's the top scorer in the competition, fresh off being the record-breaking top scorer in the Six Nations 2018. So remarkable stuff for him. On we go to round 6 then. Matt, thanks a million. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, thank you. We'll take a short break.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.